Everybody knows that the war is over. Everybody knows that the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight is fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes.
Everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Everybody welcome. Knows. Tonight, we're doing two movies of teenage angst. The first is Heathers from 1988, and the second is Pump Up the Volume from 1990.
So are we skipping the intro?
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about two movies of teenage angst. We'll start with Heathers from 1988 and move on to Pump Up the Volume from 1990. So Jason, these are on your list. Why don't you take it away? Introduce us to Heathers. Okay, I'm kidding.
I was going to say these were in no way on my list.
Yeah, well, let me first get this out of the way. And not out of the way, but let me first point out that this was actually a request from my friend Heather.
Oh, that explains it.
And this movie, Heathers especially, is actually beloved by a certain section of society. And I'm going to say a lot of women love Heathers. But we will get there in good time. Brother Jay, I have a feeling you have thoughts about the movie Heathers. Had you seen it before? And what was your reaction this time?
I've never seen it before.
We're going to come to find, I think we're going to find that that is a problem because I had not seen it before either. And I think that works to our detriment because I don't think this is a movie designed to appeal to 40-year-old men.
This movie was a struggle. It was a steamy, vacuous, big mountain of shit. And that's before I got halfway through it.
Okay. So, Brother Drew, had you seen it before, and what did you think of it this time?
You know, I thought I had seen it before, but I might have been thinking about Jawbreaker.
Yes. Yeah, we'll talk about Jawbreaker, too.
Yeah, I don't think I'd seen this before, and I really struggled with it. I don't think this is not a good movie, and I have a hard time believing it was a good movie at the time it came out. I mean, I understand that it is dark, dark satire, and that doesn't necessarily age very well, but just like on the technical level, I don't think it's well put together. The acting I thought was really bad.
It was terrible.
Yeah, I agree there.
The movie does not stand the test of time. I mean, it's super dated in some of its plot mechanics, and a lot of its attitudes. You know, it had some okay one-liners in it, but, you know, you've got Winona Ryder and Christian Slater as your leads, and I think they're both really good actors, but they were not good in this movie.
I don't think anybody was good in this movie.
The problem is they had these quippy one-liners, and they weren't delivered well, and so they were a little jarring.
They weren't really quippy, though, either. They were kind of pseudo-quippy.
And they were just shoehorned in. There was very little art to this movie.
This was a movie in search of a tagline. It was trying to generate a tagline.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I have a theory about this movie, actually. People love this movie, especially... Well, okay, former guest Di... I love this movie. She saw it recently, actually. And so I asked her to contribute something. And she said that it's really all about Mean Girls, and it's like the original revenge girl movie. It's sophisticated, and she thought Christian Slater represented a total rejection of jock culture and yuppie values. And it was on the cusp of the late 80s and consumerism and matching sweaters, and he looks at cruelty and kills it. He's an unapologetic meanness slayer. She also said that all the mean girls and jocks die. And watching it as a teenage outcast full of angst and lack of agency, it's extremely gratifying to see them die.
Okay. As someone who got beat up in high school on a regular basis and bullied, and as somebody who hated high school enough that I left high school because I hated it so badly, and hated the cliques and was suffering at some of the cliques, Even having that in the back of my mind to this day, because it still colors my bitterness and resentment towards a whole class of people that I may have to deal with, still this movie didn't reach me at that level. It didn't come across that way because it wasn't dark enough to be a dark satire, and it wasn't funny enough to be a good comedy. It didn't commit hard enough either way. That's the problem I had with it. It was too wishy-washy in what it did. It should have either gone full balls out, dark, death, black comedy, or it should have just lightened the fuck up. But this weird back and forth with the poor acting just didn't do it. Well, it didn't convince me.
Here's what I think would have improved it 100%.
That it was never made?
No. It needed an awesome soundtrack. Jawbreakers was a pedestrian story with a great soundtrack. Pump Up the Volume had a great soundtrack. Lots of the movies from the time, all those John Hughes movies, had good songs in them. This didn't have any music. I mean, it had the stupid song in the beginning and the end, and it had the made-up song. And that's about it for the soundtrack. Now, when I mentioned this on Facebook to people about what they thought about the movie, I had friend of the pod, Sheila, suggested her daughter loved the soundtrack. And I was like, what soundtrack? So she had to dig deeper. And it turns out her daughter loves the soundtrack to the musical. There's a musical based on this. Mm-hmm. And a brand new TV show.
That's been put on hiatus.
Yeah, I think I missed this movie. Without having any sort of nostalgia associated with it, I think it's a complete miss, because it's so dated, and it's just like the stuff with the gun, it's hard to take now. It really just jars you right out of the movie. The gun at the school. The trying to capitalize on gay panic, that's not really an acceptable plot device anymore. The monocle. I don't think the monocle held up at the time, but who knows?
If the gay panic had been funny, it would have held up fine. It would even be okay today if they would have, again, committed to the satire. But it wasn't even good enough to do that.
Well, and let's go through the plot a little bit. There's not much of it we have to worry about, I don't think. But there's important parts that I think that I just don't get it. And listeners, please tell us where we're missing this, because it has to be a time and a place thing. You have to be a teenager maybe to see this for the first time.
Also, I was extremely distracted because from the beginning, from the first moment I saw Christian Slater and heard him speak, he was a young Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, and that's what watching these two movies really close together, that it really highlighted to me that, yeah, in Heathers, he was just doing his Jack Nicholson shtick.
Yeah.
Where in Pump Up the Volume, that was just one of the tools in his toolbox that he used.
Yeah.
But that was the 100% the mode he was in this movie, and he's not Jack Nicholson.
No, he's not Jack Nicholson. And, you know, if that would have been just his cute thing, and he would have been surrounded by by better actors, or maybe I'm just going to take this out on the director. Because, you know, it's a writer-director. Or no, I'm sorry. It's written by Daniel Waters. I'm going to have a problem with him, too. And directed by Michael Lehman. And so the plot is we have Veronica Sawyer, played by Winona Ryder. And she's one of the most popular girls at Westerberg High School in Sherwood, Ohio. And in addition to Veronica, the popular clique consists of three wealthy and beautiful girls with the same first name. Heather Chandler, played by Kim Walker from Say Anything, and who died from a brain tumor in 2001. Not the movie, the year. Heather Duke, played by Shannon Doherty, The Secret of NIMH, 90210, and Charmed. And Heather McNamara, played by Lisanne Falk from Lesson Zero, Suicide Kings, and Say Anything. And although they're the most popular students, they're also feared and hated. And Veronica's had just about enough of their behavior and longs to return to her old life and her nerdy friends. And let me point out something that took me out of this movie from the very beginning. Her handwriting, when she's writing in her little journal.
The gigantic, swoopy, oversized, size 24 font.
Yeah, and then to find out that she's supposed to be some sort of master forger when she can't write an entire sentence on one piece of paper in her own life. Maybe because she's trying to balance that stupid monocle in her eye. Ridiculous. Anyway, so also I didn't find her likable, which, as it turns out for me, is a problem. There is not one likable character in this movie. There's some pitiable characters, but nobody is likable.
Well, the Betty was okay. Betty was okay.
She was fine, but she wasn't, I mean, there wasn't enough there to, you know, there wasn't enough there.
She was likable, but she didn't have any substance.
Yeah, exactly. So, a new student, a rebellious outsider named Jason Dean, J.D., Christian Slater. We know from Mr. Robot, True Romance, Untamed Heart, Star Trek VI, and Gleaming the Cube.
Also Robin Hood.
He's great. Nothing's wrong with Christian Slater. I mean, yeah, this is not, you know, he was doing Jack Nicholson. That was his whole job. He was going to do Jack Nicholson. He ends up in the lunchroom pulling a gun on two jocks. Kurt Kelly, who's played by Lance Fenton, who is now a practicing chiropractor in Pasadena, California. And Ram Sweeney, played by Patrick Labortrio. He's from JAG and Little House on the Prairie.
He pulls a gun on them and shoots them.
Yes, yes, with blanks or something. And they were trying to bully him, so he pulls out a gun, which is, you know, again, it's all very shocking. Like, that is a very shocking plot development. And I'm sure, you know, because there wasn't nearly the amount of school shootings in 1988, it was shocking for different reasons than it would be today. But then we have this other thing that happens, is Veronica goes to a frat party with Heather Chandler. And this is one of three times that Veronica there's an attempted date rape on her. So she refuses to have sex and ends up throwing up because he spiked her drink. Is that right? Somebody spiked her drink, maybe?
No, or I think she was just drinking too much.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So she ends up throwing up, which embarrasses Heather Chandler, and Heather Chandler seeks to destroy her, which I think is an overreaction. We also see that Heather Chandler has to give one of the jocks a blowjob, like, as her admission to the party. So that's sort of dark. There's a lot of this kind of thing happening in this movie. So, again, maybe as a late 40s guy who's a father of a girl,
You mean you didn't like the scene where the other Heather was actually just getting raped in the background
as they're tipping a cow?
Yeah.
That's
not even addressed or acknowledged.
No, it's I mean, the movie was meant to offend you.
Mission accomplished.
This is a button pushing movie.
Yeah, that button is stop.
So Heather Chandler vows revenge against Veronica. Veronica goes home and JD shows up and they make sweet, sweet love outside.
So, first of all, their lunch hour must have been hella long. Also, you know, none of them were eating any of their food, because when they got to Jason Dean, his pot pie was untouched. And then Where are her parents? In fact, where are any of the parents in this movie? Because for the most part, like, they play an entire game of croquet at night and then hump it out in the backyard with seemingly no adult supervision or intervention.
I don't think they actually played the whole game of croquet. Yeah. But
they, you know, for the Anderson clan, croquet is a special meaning.
It's a trigger sport.
Definitely. Very passionate. Yeah. I mean, I know it's one of those things where I don't want to be a dick about it. I mean, I think I do. I try when I watch a movie, I try to let the movie kind of immerse me in its world and take me where it wants to take me. And I like art. So even watching a bad movie, sometimes I try to find something positive to say about it. Because somebody put a lot of work into it. Like, this took a lot of work. This was some guy's passion. Turns out the writer's passion, we're going to get to it at the end. I have some comments about him. But not him necessarily, but this particular emission from him. Having the Heathers and Veronica all have their own color, I thought was interesting. Like, the rooms and the outfits and the croquet balls all matched with each girl. So from an artistic standpoint, I think that was an interesting choice, but it was like, oh, I see what you did there. But yeah. So next in the plot, Veronica and JD break into Heather Chandler's house because, yeah, there are no parents in this world because Heather Chandler is hungover, they're sure. And so they're going to play a prank on her, a prank that involves getting her to drink something awful, which is already kind of weird, but oh well. And where Veronica just wants to make Heather throw up and therefore kind of negate the throwing up from the night thing. I don't know how that works. JD wants to actually give her something that will kill her. Because JD is a dark, dark character in this movie. He is a bad guy. He's not a likable rogue. As we find out, he's a legitimate, like, horrible person.
Mentally ill.
Yes. Yeah, he's a psychopath.
Monster.
He's the devil from The Witches of Eastwick, right?
Well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson.
And we have a callback. So they end up this thing where they get her to drink the horrible, horrible thing. Or JD gets Veronica to give Heather the blah, blah, blah. And so she dies. And JD then has Veronica make a dramatic suicide note in Heather's handwriting. Because, of course, master forger. So the school and the community look on Heather's suicide as a tragic decision made by a popular but ostensibly troubled teenager. And I love the fact in this world, they would publish a suicide note in the yearbook. Like, that is a dark world indeed. But this creates a situation where, you know, suicide becomes very popular because she's a popular person that did it. Unfortunately, this actually, to break into the real world, when this sort of thing happens in a school, there is sort of a contagion effect with suicide, so it's a scary thing. But stepping back into this world, because this movie does not address that point at all.
It's too bad that monocle thing didn't become a contagion, because that was classy in no way.
So Heather Duke, Shannon Doherty, steps up and becomes Heather Chandler's, takes on her role, in fact, wears her red scrunchie, because remember, all these colors mean something. And so Heather Duke is actually sort of, she's being manipulated by JD as well, right?
Yes.
So JD is playing chess with these people. Then we have Kurt and Ram, the jocks that JD fired blanks at. They trying to ruin Veronica's reputation by implying that they had sex with her. So JD gets Veronica to lure them into the woods to get revenge on them, like pull another prank. And there's this whole thing where he convinces her that, oh, yeah, he's got blanks in the gun, blah, blah, blah. There is actually a choice where they deleted a scene where Veronica was going to shoot her bunny with one of the, like, Ikluge bullets or whatever, because they thought that was too dark. But anyway, so we have this like, horribly homophobic. I mean, it turns out This is prime time for homophobia, right, Brother Jay? Get you in the sweet spot. I mean, it's been a tradition for a long time, but So we have this whole jocks set up to look like they killed each other in a suicide pact because of
mineral water.
Exactly. Which, okay, that was sort of clever, I thought. Then we have the character of Martha Dumbtruck. And in a better movie, you'd feel sorry for Martha Dumbtruck and she would have some sort of redeeming quality. But she has no redeeming quality and she doesn't get redeemed.
It doesn't matter. There's a scene at the end of this movie where Veronica is sort of eschewing her life as a popular girl and she decides she's going to take pity on the poor fat girl that nobody likes and ask her to go to prom with her.
The fat girl that she tried to destroy at the beginning of the movie.
Right. Reluctantly, but yeah. And so in a good movie, or even just an okay movie, in that scene, the movie would have had Martha turn to Veronica and say, "No thanks, I already have a date." But no, in this movie, she's just like, "Oh, yeah, thank you."
We'll get to the end here shortly, but because it's coming up.
Not soon enough.
So, blah, blah, blah. The third Heather, Heather McNamara, is depressed. Actually, sorry, Martha Dumbtruck is the fat girl that in the beginning the girls make fun of during their lunch hour. And she actually pins a suicide note to her shirt and walks into traffic, but does not get killed, just injured. So that's kind of sad.
Which part's sad? That she couldn't kill herself or that she tried to kill herself?
Well, if she killed herself, you could feel legitimately bad for her. But because she failed in that, she's just laughable at that, too. So Heather McNamara, let's see, what was the radio call? Oh, she calls a radio station, I guess, and talks about depression.
And Tweety.
Yeah, and Heather Duke spreads a word around school. And so Heather McNamara attempts to overdose on pills, but is saved by Veronica, who, if you know about one thing Veronica knows how to do, is help someone throw up.
That's really funny. I don't remember that at all. Maybe I fell asleep.
Yeah, I remember it. It was just terrible.
So Veronica is now fed up with JD because things are out of control. And let's see, after JD tries to rape her, he climbs into her room, perhaps to kill her, but she has fashioned a fake noose and so convinces him that she is dead.
Definitely to kill her.
So she fakes her own death. And he gives a monologue about all of his plans as if he were a Bond villain. And then he goes about, because we learn that his father is some sort of demolitions guy. So he's going to blow up the entire school after this funny scheme of collecting enough signatures to make it look like the entire school has done a suicide pact. Which is ridiculous.
Yep.
So, blah, blah, blah. We've got a confrontation in the boiler room between Veronica and JD. We have Veronica shoots JD and gets out, and the bombs are disarmed or whatever. But then JD shows up with the bomb strapped to his body. And there's another little monologue/dialogue. And then he blows himself up.
It's about 100 minutes too late.
Well, so he blows himself up, hurting only himself, right? And Veronica then does a heel turn and confronts Heather Duke and grabs the red scrunchie from her head, the crown of the queen, and puts it on her own head and says that there's a new sheriff in town and then invites Martha Dumbtruck to hang out on prom night and watch movies with her.
Wait, one of the few good quippy lines that made me laugh out loud was like, "You look like hell." And she says, "I just got back."
So, in the original ending of this movie,
there was a different ending.
Yeah, he blew up the entire school, and there was a prom in heaven. I think the musical actually has the prom in heaven, where the Martha Dumbtruck is like sings the final song,
like Grease style,
kinda. But again, I haven't seen the musical, so I'm not sure. But here's my problem. I hate these characters. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them. I don't like anybody, including Veronica. It's supposed to be dark, but there's got to be some light in a dark movie. There has to be a story worth telling. and then making that story super dark. There's got to be like a hero's journey or some sort of morality tale or something. I needed something standard in this movie.
This to me, and this isn't a one-to-one comparison, but this is like Natural Born Killers that's been put on a copy machine a million times, so it's got replicative fading, because it's trying to be edgy and murderous rampage, and it's trying to have crazy characters that have some kind of terrible love story and tawdry affair. But he's no Woody Harrelson and she's no Juliette Lewis.
Yeah, well, here's my problem again. There's no happiness for Dump Truck. There is no hero's turn for Veronica. She doesn't dismantle this broken system, the system that she hates and blah, blah, blah. She doesn't even particularly hate it. That was JD. She took down the Heathers, and instead of breaking the system and making it as a new day in school, she just takes over as the leader.
Also, why the fuck didn't she just pull the goddamn fire alarm?
There's that. She could have alerted the authorities, but in this movie, we didn't have any authorities.
She could have evacuated the whole building. Fire alarm. Done.
I mean, this... I guess this movie is some sort of commentary on how hopeless it feels to be a teenager, right? But it didn't give me anything to actually care about.
That's the thing. And I mean, to me, again, and I don't know anything about this writer other than to me, this feels like a masturbatory revenge fantasy from somebody who had a horrible time in high school, which is great. Everybody has a horrible time in high school. I mean, maybe, you know, we're going to get to the next movie. Maybe not. I didn't have a horrible time in high school. High school was just fine. But, you know, I mean, this movie, It's a total fantasy movie, but it's just not good. It's not edgy because now things are way more edgy. So maybe at the time it was, you could live on edge alone. Like you can live on, oh, I can't believe they said that. Fuck me gently with a chainsaw. Yeah.
Very.
Very, yeah. So I can see how that would be popular for a little bit, but since it didn't happen to me in 1988, it does not survive the test of time. I do not recommend this movie.
Yeah. You know what else he wrote?
What else did he write?
Hudson Hawk.
Another winner.
The Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
Oh, that's Andrew Dice Clay's breakout role.
Yeah. He's also written the Heathers TV series.
Well, I want to say nice things about art, and I think there probably are some clever things in this movie, but there's not enough of them and I don't like it. And I'm sorry for my friend Heather that I'm not on this particular bandwagon. And I know that for Di and for Heather, and maybe for lots of young girls in the late 80s, this was like meaningful. But because I don't have that nostalgia, I can't with this movie.
As someone who was a young gay boy in the 80s, who was much maligned and ostracized in my own right, I don't identify with this movie.
Had we seen it, though, in the day, maybe we would have a little bit more.
I don't know. I really doubt it.
I mean, there's no way to manufacture that now. I mean, we just are. We are just on a greater or lesser scale toward 50 years old. So, this movie wasn't meant for us.
Yeah, that totally sums up how I felt watching this movie. The entire time, I just felt like this movie is not for me.
Yep.
And I was trying to figure out a way to give it a shot and come up with some sort of perspective that would allow me a point of entry, but I could never get there.
Well, and I will say that boyfriend Jesse, who is definitely a younger generation than myself, felt the same as I did about this movie. Hated it. He hated it. And he is much closer to the opposite side of 50.
Yeah, he's probably the same age as the actors were when they were playing teenagers.
So,
this is a rough one, guys.
Maybe people who have a nostalgia for this movie, you're right. Maybe they have a nostalgia because they saw it at a time when it spoke to them and gave them hope? Question mark.
gave them feelings. I mean, there's plenty of stupid movies that I like for strictly nostalgia reasons.
We're about to talk about one of those for me.
Yeah. I mean, that. Yeah, exactly. We're going to get there. Yeah, 100%. And you know what? If they had thrown some music in this, if they had spent some money on music, that could have helped a lot.
I don't know. Not on rewatch. They could have put in all the good music they want, and I don't think it would have helped this. It's just bad writing.
Yeah.
Bad directing, too.
It wasn't even bad writing. It was mediocre writing. If it was bad writing, it may have had some kitsch to it. But it wasn't even bad enough to be bad. It was just blah. It was like unflavored oatmeal.
It felt really hacky.
Yeah.
Like, it's too much production value to feel that hacky.
It felt unpolished and unfinished. Like this was a first attempt that never got it never got out of draft.
Well, and you know, there were other things. I mean, when did the song Valley Girl come out? I mean, when did the movie Square Pigs come out? There's plenty of things that
you mean were, the TV show?
Yeah, I mean the TV show. Sorry. There were plenty of like subculture. Well, that's, you know, I don't even know where I'm going, because there's always been references to subculture and trying to make it more than like the 50s style, like from Happy Days, and the Welcome Back Cotter guys. I mean, they had I heard a joke about a comedian who, when they heard the news that the guy who played Horshack on Welcome Back Cotter died, he's like, well, you know, the ironic thing is tonight in some mortuary, somebody is going up his nose with a rubber hose.
That's a deep, deep cut.
It is, and deep and dark. Oh, which is something like this movie doesn't have. This movie did not make money at the box office. It only made money on video. So it really did appeal to like a cult audience. It was like Rocky Horror Picture Show without any of the music.
Rocky Horror Picture Show evoked emotion and still does.
Because of the music. Yeah, no, I'm telling you.
A decent soundtrack at least would have been something to latch onto.
Yeah,
it would have possibly eased some of the pain.
Yeah. Okay, so, Brother Jay, do I even need to ask you what this rating is?
I want my hour and 40 minutes back. I am 1 hour and 40 minutes closer to death having watched this movie, and I have nothing to show for it.
No, you have a lovely conversation with your brothers about it.
I was going to say, other than a podcast episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad this was on Netflix and I didn't ostensibly pay for it other than, you know, subscription fees. Because had I rented it or anything else, I would have had a deep, 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 dark regret.
You don't want the 30th anniversary Blu-ray?
Nah, I'm going to pass on that. Nah, this is a big F. This is a big F. This movie was a big F. This movie was as big an F as that horrible punctuation dresser she had.
I kind of like that.
There was a lot of style in this movie.
No, it wasn't style.
Well, I'm sorry. You're right. It's not the right word. This movie had a lot of...
attempted kitsch.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of set dressing and...
A lot of attempts, not a lot of success.
Yeah. So, Brother Drew, was it worth it?
No, if you do not already have fond feelings about this movie, there's no reason to watch it. It's dated. It does not hold up. If you're looking for a movie about teenage angst, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of better options. It's just, yeah, like I said, this movie was just not for me. I mean, I'm not mad it exists, but it really felt like a waste of time for me, and it made me sad because I do like Winona Ryder and Christian Slater. I think they both have a lot of charisma, and they usually make really interesting choices with their performances. And this movie was a huge miss all the way around.
So I'm going to suggest that in another 13 years or so, when your girls are old enough, they should watch this and tell you what they think.
No. No, they shouldn't.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna say no. There'll be other movies by the time.
That'd be a good experiment.
So, are we ready to tackle movie number two?
I was born ready to talk about this movie.
Listener Dougie. Wake up, Dougie. I will later read some of his thoughts about this movie. And he actually predicted what he thought we would vote for this movie. And I think he's going to be about right.
Now, we saw this movie, the three of us, in the theater together, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I was maybe just on the border of being too young to see this movie.
Well, 1990.
I was 13.
Yeah. No, it was perfect.
Yeah. Well, as it turns out, I think it was. It was perfect.
Yeah, this is on Drew's list, I'm sure. But it's also on my list, too, because this movie gave me a couple things, and I have nostalgia for this movie for a couple reasons. We had already been introduced, because of Brother Jay, to Henry Rollins. So Henry Rollins' version of MC5's Kick Out the Jams is pretty great, although I still like the original better. And Blue Oyster Cult does a good version on Some Enchanted Evening. This is the movie where I discovered Leonard Cohen.
Me too.
Yep. And then through Drew's deep dive into Leonard Cohen, I grew to like a couple Leonard Cohen albums. Kind of like his entire collection, but it's great. It's great for this movie is all about teenage angst. And unlike the other movie, this movie has parents in it. What this movie does, though, it's a more traditional story. So it has, you know, you can criticize it for being a little bit less creative in that sense. But the writing's better, and I liked a lot of characters in this movie.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs?
As a father?
Yeah.
I think this guy was a better father than Steve Jobs, right?
Well, yeah.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
So, okay, so we'll do it like we had before. Brother Jay, you had seen this movie. We all saw this movie before.
Yeah, we all saw it together.
So you didn't have any fond memories for it?
I didn't. Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I liked it when I saw it. I didn't. At the time that we saw it, it wasn't one of my top 10 movies. I didn't hate it. I liked it at the time. It was a fine movie. It was probably a 6.5 to 7 out of 10 at that time. It didn't resonate quite with me because it at the time it seemed a little just kind of like I couldn't buy it, which was only amplified on rewatch.
It was an interesting time for you to watch this movie about high school angst, because it was right around the time when you were deciding, or maybe you had just decided that you were about done with high school, right?
What year did this movie come out?
1990?
Summer of 90?
I believe, yes.
So I would have already quit high school, been in other high school, and graduated.
At the movie theater.
Yep.
Sweet. With your mullet.
Yeah.
Rocking the mullet.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
Those were the days. Yeah. So I think maybe parts of it cut a little close to home, because some of the characters were indeed characters I had at the vocational high school. So that was like the Steve character was somebody that I can identify. Like I had classes with him.
Which one was Steve?
The guy that got expelled, the blonde guy. I think his name was Steve.
I think it was like Mick or Max or something, but yeah.
Whatever. Whoever it was. The crazy spastic blonde punk that...
the guy with the smoke bombs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I perhaps am just projecting, but, but no, I like at vocational school, he was present. I could identify him with the name of the person who I sat next to. But I will not name such a person, but
did you get along with that person?
I did. Yeah. You know what? The funny thing at vocational school, I got along with everybody. You know why? Because we all had something in common, and it was the last stop for all of us. It was sink or swim, and we were all equal because it was that binary. It was either we got up and did our work, or we got out and failed. And it was that simple. And there was no possibility for click. There was no time for bullshit. We worked at our own pace. There were teachers to help us if we needed it. They left us the hell alone if we didn't. And of course, at that point in time, we got introduced to group, where you sit around and talk about your feelings, which was something that I probably needed a lot more of at that time in my life. So, circling back to the movie plot.
This is going to be my vote. Why we need to watch Nightmare on Elm Street 3. I'm just saying, yeah. Jay, you're going to love this movie. You probably have already seen it, actually.
I've never seen it.
Oh, you're going to like it so much more after you just told me that story.
Great. Yeah. So my guess sounds true, that you were already probably more mature than the intended audience for this movie.
I was mature
beyond your age at that time. Not like now.
Sure. Because I just powered through everything. It was a mad rush just to finish. Because I knew if I didn't finish, it wasn't going to get done. That's like, if I didn't keep going and had momentum, I was going to choke to death. It was, again, very binary. And looking back, I'm like, thank God I just kept going, because I don't know what would have happened if I had actually stopped and thought about it. But,
you know, I don't, let's see. I think if I were to describe my brother Jason, even at that time, like from that time to today, I would describe him as an unstoppable force. Like, there's, you know, we all have our strengths. Yours is a dogged persistence. You persisted. No, let me just say, yeah. So you are. So whenever I think I just can't do that, I think, you know what? Brother Jay would do this. He would he would get out of the car and he would point at the lady in front of him and direct her damn traffic out of the way. So anyway,
I think that stems from a sense of fearlessness that I had
beyond your years.
Well, I don't know if it was beyond my years. I think it was young naivete a lot of the time for me. It never occurred to me. It never occurred to me otherwise.
It's just a character trait of yours that I've admired.
It is. I still sometimes have that naivete where I'm so binary. I don't comprehend why people can make other choices, because I don't ever see those as options. It's either A or B. So, and that's. As I get older,
it's not
gets rougher.
Just that. It's also, like I said, you persevere. When you set your mind to something,
I'm a stubborn fuck.
Yeah. So anyway, okay. So sorry, compliment time is over. Get back to work.
I'm very flattered by that characterization. I think people that I live with now would say that I'm just a stubborn ass. So
there's always elements to these things, offshoots.
We all evolve as we age.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's lots of it's just one shade of that particular color as being an asshole. So anyway,
it's the brown note.
Yeah. Okay, so Drew, what was your reaction to watching the movie this time? I think you were probably prime age for this movie. I was probably a little bit too old for it, but I was that mature, though. I was the right maturity level.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why this is going to be a really interesting conversation, because we were all around the time, but like close enough. But for like a angsty high school movie, we were all coming at it from like the total opposite sides. I think I really was the perfect age for this movie, because I was about to, I was probably going into eighth grade, so I was a year away from high school, right about that age when I start to wonder, like, what is high school going to be like? And I would have come to the realization that my brother, who would have been going to high school with me for a year, was not going to be there. So, you know, there's some anxiety associated with that.
Wait, you had anxiety that I wasn't going to be there?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you talked tough, but I think it would have been a net benefit for me. Yeah, and it was that, just that era of the late 80s, early 90s where, you know, it really was an angsty time. I mean, it was a time that was about to give birth to Nirvana. There really was a sense of, you know, everything's fucked. And, you know, when you're 13, you have that feeling, but you're not mature enough to articulate what it is or why you feel that way. So at the time watching this movie, it was sort of, even though it's rewatching it, it's a little over the top and melodramatic. But, you know, that's exactly what you want and what you really enjoy consuming when you're, you know, that young and angsty yourself and hormonal and just trying to figure shit out and not understanding the world around you. Yeah, this is a perfect movie for that. And it even threw in some boobs.
Yeah.
Perfect for a 13-year-old boy.
And I like the fact that these kids look like kids. Like, they were all sort of different levels of goofy.
I mean, well, they were kids.
I mean, except for Christian Slater and Samantha Mathis. Well, even though she was actually a little bit more goofy. And yeah, and it turns out the dressed down Christian Slater, when he's not pretending to be Jack Nicholson, it's actually a fairly decent performance.
Yeah, it's actually really painful to watch. Like, being like a introverted, shy person, especially when I was younger, that was really hard to watch. In a good way. I mean, it evoked feelings.
Yeah. And it was funny. The movie was funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is actually even, I think, an even shorter plot. So we start out with Leonard Cohen's Everybody Knows, which is just a great song and it just sets a great mood, I think. Brother Jay disagrees. You're not a Leonard Cohen fan?
I'm a Leonard Cohen fan. I don't like that song.
Oh, I love that song. I love the lyrics.
It's perfect for this particular role. That's why he plays it so much. And that's why, you know, okay, I neglected to mention that one of my favorite bands from the time, Concrete Blonde, does the Leonard Cohen song during the end credits, right? And
yep.
This is the worst Concrete Blonde song ever. I mean, it's silly to have it in the same thing. They could have picked any other Concrete Blonde song.
Oh, it's also the most insulting thing about the soundtrack is that the Leonard Cohen version is not on the movie soundtrack.
Which is, because it's played like four times in the movie.
Mm-hmm. It's only the Concrete Blonde version, which led me to the Leonard Cohen rabbit hole because I had to go seek it out independently. Otherwise, I would have only listened to that Leonard Cohen song probably ever.
And that was the I'm Your Man album.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great album actually. But you couldn't have replaced Jazz Police or something with Everybody Knows. There's just something about it. I mean, that's Leonard Cohen had, like, I really like was it Anthem, the next album, had Democracy on it.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff there too. But anyway. And actually, this time for me, this was deep in the time of I worked at the hotel, and so I was getting music from Brother Jay, because we had the Henry Rollins thing coming up, we had Nirvana coming up, not quite yet, but we had a little bit of music coming from, and Drew was getting his own music style going along. It wasn't all just Stan Bush, and I was getting music from Bellman at work, who were sort of into the sub pop scene. And so I got a lot of music from them. So the music in this movie, I think, is great. I mean, they just have fun stuff. And because he's playing a pirate radio DJ.
That Pixie song is still in heavy rotation for me.
Which Pixie song?
Wave of Mutilation.
Mm. Yeah, there's just good stuff in it. And again, I mean, you know, Henry Rollins' Kick Out the Jams, I probably would have preferred to hear the MC5, but Henry Rollins is pretty great, and you could have picked a Henry Rollins song or a Black Flag song. Well, maybe not quite. not quite that mainstream.
Not quite the right tone.
No. You know, and I think I missed the Pixies boat. I don't even know if I could name another Pixie song.
Where is my mind?
Yeah. When we do a Pixies retrospective, you'll have to indoctrinate me because I just missed that whole section.
Observe and report, closing title
like,
sequence.
Alice in Chains and the Pixies.
Oh, I love Alice in Chains.
Yeah.
So I watched Heather's first, and I was so just like bummed after like that movie depressed me, and not in the way it wanted to.
No, it depressed me too. I went to bed depressed that night.
Yeah, it was like it just felt like a waste of time, and you know, it was like, what are we doing with this whole podcast thing?
Well, I didn't quite go that far.
Well, yeah, I didn't actually go. I didn't go that far either. But it did make me think. You know what we need to do? This will fix it. We need to do a music episode.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah. It's funny. Heather's didn't depress me. It made me angry because it wasted my time. So I didn't feel depressed. So yeah. I guess that's my stubborn fucking attitude, because I was just like, God damn this fucking movie and who picked it?
Yeah, I think I was bummed because it just didn't make me really feel anything.
And I watched Pump Up the Volume first, and I'm glad that I did.
Well, did Pump Up the Volume make you feel something?
Yeah. Yeah, I still think it's not to cut right to the end.
No, go ahead.
I still think it's a good movie.
Yeah, there you go. See, I was worried that you didn't like it at all.
Oh no, okay. I mean it hasn't aged well. Time has not done it any favors. I think that the movie holds up for the most part. The music definitely holds up because it's, you know, but there are some issues with the plot that I'm able to see now that I clearly would have just glossed over when I would have been in my teens. But no, I mean, this was a movie that it's a fine movie on rewatch. I'm not going to watch it again next month, but you know, it was good to revisit it after a couple decades.
This was one of those Escape from Witch Mountain Walt Disney live action movie plots.
Yeah,
except
I would agree with that.
They threw in some really good, you know, music and a little bit grittier, but pretty much the plot. I mean, Dean Jones could have played.
There was fucking.
Yeah. Well, Dean Jones could have played Harry, maybe. Maybe not. But I'm trying to think who would be the female. Who was the female in all those? I'll have to do some deep dive on Disney live action. When we do the Apple Dumpling Gang, we'll talk about Disney live action movies and how wonderful they were.
Helen Reddy.
Snowball Express.
Yeah, I don't remember that one. But I remember a lot of like The Freaky Cat Friday. From Outer Space. Yeah. Yeah. Shaggy D.A. Like what's some Fred McMurray and Dean Jones.
See, all
Buddy
of these
Hackett
are
as a kindly mechanic.
All of these were assembly room movies at Rabbit Creek Elementary School every other week.
Which is why I love them. it's because the school owned them and could play them whenever they wanted to.
Yes, with frightening regularity.
Yeah, on 16mm film.
Yeah, because they couldn't give us iPads and tell us to go watch them.
Also, you were happy to go see that movie because that's what you got. You went and you saw what was playing.
Was that a shot at me this week? Because I'm taking that one personally.
I'm saying that they couldn't. The teachers sometimes got over. I mean, I don't know about your teachers, but my teachers sometimes got overwrought and they couldn't deal with all of us little hellions all at the same time. So I distinctively remember at points in time teachers rolling in the 35mm projectors 16, just because
16,
whatever they were. Yeah, you're right, 16mm. But rolling in the projectors because it was either that.
Hey, you were a projectionist for God's sakes, a professional.
Yeah. All right. You're right. So I'm hoist by my own petard, but, I knew like in the second grade, when the teacher rolled the projector into the classroom, it was because if she didn't do that, she was going to murder one of us or many of us. She just needed a few hours with us not yammering and bickering, and like there just had to be a stop.
Yeah, just a couple years later, it was already the VCR cart.
Yes. Oh, yes.
With the big seatbelt on it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the gigantic, like, 36-inch tube TV or something.
That weighed like a million pounds. And that was a so complete tip-over hazard.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Oh, the
It was longer front to back than it was wide.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Sometimes you actually had to put heavy things in the bottom of the
to keep
cart.
It from tipping over.
The good old days. So, it starts out with we see Christian Slater as the high school student who is a total introvert during the day at high school, but at night he turns on his unveils his character of Happy Harry Hardon,
mm-hmm.
where he plays music that he likes, which he actually talks over and sings over, which I think would be really unpleasant. And I love radio, so I love the idea of this, of course. I would probably listen to that, like when I was younger. If there was a pirate radio station, well, we had, independent radio out of, Big Lake area, I think you could barely get. But then we had Herb Shalen at night, which was the professional version of this, where he'd read letters and take calls and he just did his own thing and he had sex jokes and he was very risque. And so it was all, this is not Herb Shalen. This is in the movie here. And he's getting letters from the Eat Me, Beat Me lady, who turns out to be Samantha Mathis, Nora De Niro in the movie. And, it's fun. He gets to do a little Jack Nicholson stuff or whatever. He gets to be super cool, but during the day he's not cool, and his parents don't know. His parents are old hippies. They are grown up hippies. They are yuppies. Hippies that turn into yuppies. Sorry, that's a big point.
And he instigates a suicide.
He doesn't instigate it. He just doesn't.
Facilitates in some way.
He doesn't help. So that's a big thing, is a student calls him, or he calls a student.
He doesn't hinder, though.
Yeah, he's pretty glib about the whole suicide note, and never tells the guy not to do it.
Because he doesn't believe that anybody who's actually corresponding with him is being serious.
Yeah, because he's not for real. He's playing a character. He's whom everybody's in on the joke. Because we got bigger than a baby's arm thing. That kind of sets that stage.
So let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Your career in high school, your 3 or 4 years in high school, however, which years you wish to choose, how many of your peers committed suicide that you know of?
Not many.
Two?
Yeah, I can't think of one person by name.
Six.
That's a lot.
Three who I knew by name.
Yeah. So. Not a topic of humor for you then?
No, I'm just saying, I think it was more of a mindset watching this movie.
Ah.
Because okay. there's a
there's more reality to it?
There was some of the, reality, but I could identify.
With the suicidal kid or with the situation?
The whole situation.
Yeah. This movie gave us real characters.
Yes, that's it. It brought me, as opposed to Heather's, which took me out of the movie. This actually brought me into the movie because I could identify with the situation, not necessarily with these characters directly, but the feelings were familiar enough, or the situations were similar enough, or had some kind of similarities that I could get to the same point in kind of sharing. And I think that's why this movie stood up for me, is because I could still kind of remember that familiarity. I don't know if that was coherent or not.
I mean, it makes sense to me. I mean, go ahead, Drew.
Oh, I was gonna say I think I get what you're putting down. The nostalgia part of this viewing experience is really strong for this movie for me. So It does a really good job of evoking what it felt like at that time. And I can remember it very specifically. I mean, it's sort of the movie watching equivalent of experiencing that scent every once in a while that just brings you right back to a very specific time and place.
Well, okay, I was in Walmart the other day, and it was just Kelly and I because she had a weekday, or she had Monday off, so we were kind of just doing our errands. And I heard on the Muzak or whatever, but it was real music. It was Eagles' "New Kid in Town," which is not is not my favorite Eagles song. It's probably not. In fact, of that, the Greatest Hits Volume 2 album is probably one of my least favorite Eagles songs on that album. It's not a song that I would ever think, you know what, I want to listen to "New Kid in Town." However, I think because of our upbringing, I am like biologically programmed to smile when I hear the Eagles. Mm-hmm. It's like a peaceful, easy feeling, if you will. And
did you plan that?
No, I didn't.
You really took us the long way around to get to that one.
No. You should just take it easy.
Yes, exactly. I should. Yeah. Well, I try to take it to the limit, but I know if I keep the pun runs going, there's going to be a heartache tonight. This movie, I mean, the music is right. But yeah, the characters are right too. Every character, I mean, from Seth Green to the fat kid to the blonde burnout kid in vocational school, they all rang true. I mean, a little bit stereotypical, but not as stereotypical as Heather's.
This movie, I think at least it respects kids in a way that Heather's didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, none of the kids were villainous.
They were doing the kinds of things you would expect kids to do, being a little, you know, shifty and unsure of themselves and unstable and rebellious enough with that kind of apprehensive hesitation, but also kind of that bubbling, simmering energy that could just be unleashed at any moment.
Yeah, I love the fact that they had like the deep, dark depression followed by the dancing to music in your room. Those are all great things. And I mean, again, this plot is like a Disney live action movie. There is a villain, and the villain is like the school administrators. And I think it's a little bit of an easy choice to make.
Yeah. That's the one thing that, doesn't hold up as I watch it when I'm older now. I think when I was a kid, like, It's gratifying to see like the school administration portrayed as like a cartoonish villain, but now that I'm older, I can see that this movie, I don't think needed that.
I think so
it would
either.
Have been a more confident choice to just really focus on the struggles of just being a high school kid trying to navigate your way into adulthood.
And I thought the part where Christian Slater's parents think that he might actually be Harry, and they go and try to get into his room to have a talk with him after the school meeting. And he stalls him while he turns off his radio equipment and hides it. And then they find out the girl comes and saves the day. And then that little talk between mom and dad, which was too cute by half on rewatch. But still, it's funny. I mean, it would be played by Eugene Levy now in one of the American Pie movies. But, yeah, you didn't need the big bad villain. You didn't need the conspiracy. Because the thing about teenage angst is that there's not an overwhelming... Like, it's not a Lovecraftian nightmare. Like, really, it's just hard to be a teen. And... teachers are can be irritating just because they're frustrated with your teenage bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, that teenage angst that occurs can be distracted easily sometimes.
Yeah.
Into something else.
By a pirate radio station.
Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the movie has like a happy ending. It's got slogans. It's got the kids against the man, which is awesome. I was trying to float an idea to Di at work today It didn't really come off well, but I'll try it on you guys and see if it makes sense. We were kind of talking, actually a bunch of people at work were talking about Heathers and how the reason she found it so gratifying to see all those cool kids get taken down, all the mean girls get taken down, is because she wasn't sophisticated enough to be that person. Like, you know, she was like the mousy girl or whatever, and or the outsider. And we all kind of talked about how, oh yeah, any confidence that we have in our own lives now, we came from being in our 20s and 30s and whatever. I mean, you know, I was not a confident teen. I was not a confident, I wasn't really a confident 20s person, really. I had to go crazy to get some confidence, and just from blind Griswold energy did I get any practice being a real person. So here's the stretch. I was saying, one of the things that has kind of alarmed me a little bit is that the survivors of the Parkland shooting, the teenagers that have gone to these rallies and are outspoken, they're getting a lot of pushback by old white guys. And I wonder whether really confident, well-spoken teens are scary, because we were never those.
Old white guys are turning into the minority.
Nah.
They're losing power.
Yeah, but old guys don't know that.
Yeah, they do.
It is disconcerting. It's not the right word, but it's really surprising to see like how put together and media savvy some of these teens are. Like in ways I can't fathom, and I can't believe that it's just because they experienced this horrible tragedy that propelled them into being that put together.
Oh, no, part of it's the fact that they grew up with social media. They've engaged it at a nearly embryonic level. Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and all those platforms existed and may have predated them.
Well, and also, and so, in this particular school, this was a pretty awesome, like, art forward school, I think. They had a lot of exposure to, like, public speaking and that kind of thing. So the ones we're seeing giving impassioned speeches, they just didn't wake up the day after the shooting and become good speakers. They were good speakers to begin with.
Yeah. It shows.
Yeah. I've been very impressed, and I find it one of the reasons I like being on Facebook still, through all the bad things, is that I get to find out which of my acquaintances are just jackasses. You're going to go on whole rant about a Cuban flag on the jacket of a Cuban American girl who comes from Florida, like it's promoting a communist country. Fuck you. Yeah. Also, I don't have to speak for Emma Gonzalez. She does fine on her own.
Indeed.
Yeah. So anyway,
people are picking weird hills to die on.
Oh yeah, it's interesting, and that's why I think it's threatening. You know. Mm-hmm. Also, it's funny because, none of them would like me to speak for them, so I don't have any need to speak for them. They're doing fine, and also, I'm sure, you know, because they are 17 or whatever. There's plenty of room for them to screw up. And, you know, maybe when Emma Gonzalez is, I think that's her name, is 40 years old and has like three kids and very long hair, she'll look back at the time when she was bald and think, oh, that was a weird choice. But maybe not.
Maybe not. I mean, but it's also, tying it back to the movie, it's also sort of aspirational in a way that the fantasy of Christian Slater's character is portrayed in the movie of, you know, if you're that painfully shy and awkward in real life, that it's really encouraging to see someone portrayed like that, but who can also have this other persona where they're funny and charismatic and articulate and really clever. So that's one thing that struck me watching it as I'm older now, is that's probably something that really spoke to me at the time. because that was not a skill set that I had or even have to this day, but it certainly was something to aspire to, just to have that in you.
And I think it's also important to have people, or in this case, a movie, tell you things that your parents can't tell you. I mean, they can tell you the words, but coming from your parents doesn't really mean anything. But to have, you know, a character in a movie say, everybody is broken. You know, we're just all trying to figure this thing out. And that's kind of a lesson that's I find important to remember. Because, like, maybe mm-hmm. something bad happened to the writer of Heathers. And that's why he wrote such a mean, bleak story. But here's you have any more thoughts? Because I have actually a final thought on Pump Up the Volume before we get to the, well, maybe after we have the wrap up, but go ahead.
I mean, I took lots of notes, although I think the notes are likely kind of moot and irrelevant. Mostly it was just observations so that I could keep track of what I was watching. Mark's teacher's mustard pantsuit was amazing.
The good teacher, you mean?
Yeah. The coach with the pocket protector was just so cliche. But it made me chuckle. I bounced back and forth, though, at certain parts of this movie because I made notes like, Christian Slater trying to sing Beastie Boys was cringe inducingly bad.
Yeah, it was great.
There was lots of goth emo kids before goth emo kids existed. This movie, he tried to coin a catchphrase, so be it, which almost worked, in contrast to Heathers, which they never even got that far.
Very.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing how he could wander all over his room with his stationary mic, and yet his volume never changed on the radio.
That's a podcaster tip.
Yeah. And I said, we know all about creating good audio.
Well, we all know about creating audio. And remember, he was doing it live.
The microwave full of exploding media was kind of awesome. I wondered how you survived watching that.
PTSD, Eric.
Yeah. I thought it was funny that the press came and it was clearly a Fox News affiliate. Staged smoke, fake news. He has this odd fixation/obsession with cock rings, of which he admits later that he has no experience with. The FCC vans were straight out of V for Vendetta. Although I guess the V for Vendetta vans were probably straight out of this movie, but.
Also out of all of the Disney live-action movies.
Exactly.
They would be also, they just got finished chasing the cat from outer space.
Also, I thought it was a very odd choice to have super slow-mo at the cable being yanked out on the Jeep. That just seemed like an odd choice. I don't know that it was really necessary. But then also...
I've always remembered it, though.
I thought this... I don't know that... This movie will age well to other generations because I don't know how many kids are going to end up listening to the radio.
No, that's my point. That's what I'm getting to. Did you get a feeling while you were listening to watching this movie that we are Happy Harry Hardon?
Well,
at the end of the movie, when like from this movement, you have all these people doing their own pirate radio stations, including other students and other teachers. We're that. Podcasters are that. We're sitting in a room naked except for a cock ring talking about movies about guys who were sitting in a room naked with a cock ring. It's great. Freedom. It's total pirate radio.
At the risk of ruining this bonding moment between the three of us, I'm going to respectfully decline to share that moment. But I will say that...
I've never been happier that I can only see your torsos.
Yeah, well,
but way to commit, Eric.
not halfway. I was just thinking to myself at the end of the movie when I was writing down my notes, trying to kind of capture some thoughts. Some of the edginess to this movie is lost in the generation because a pirate radio then would have been a huge deal. somebody popping up now on a making their own podcast or having a live stream or having a YouTube channel isn't uncommon.
That's true.
Anymore.
Yeah, that's so, true. Christ, even our parents listen to podcasts. My wife is listening to a podcast, not mine, which is actually
And I
fine.
Just downloaded a new podcast app today.
Which one are you using?
Overcast.
Oh. Downloaded it when I thought Downcast was going away, but turns out it was just my equipment.
Apple's podcast app finally pissed me off for the last time today, and I'm done. I was done with it. Just I was like Madeline Kahn in Clue. I was ready to set fire to everybody at Apple. I just so angry.
What did you do specifically?
So I have a podcast that I have gone back to listen. It's a radio show that I used to listen to years ago when it was on the air. It's not on the air anymore. So I'm actually like right now I'm listening to radio shows from 2008, right when McCain picked Palin as running mate.
Oh, exciting times. I remember them well.
And so what I do is because I have access to the whole library because I was a paid subscriber at some point. I will download the whole month of those radio shows and then I will line them up in a playlist and then play them. And that way they'll play continuously. So anytime I want to go to the podcast and listen, it just picks up where I left off and it goes right to the next episode, which is the next day. And they had a show 5 days a week. It was 4 hours a day, which ends up being 3 hours a day after commercials are taken out. They're edited out. So some days when I go to work or I'm at work, I'm listening to podcasts, or some days on the drive to work, I listen to audiobooks, but listen to podcasts at work. However, more and more often than not, the podcast app will, upon resumption, regardless of the position that the current episode is in, it skips to the end and starts the next one. So then I have to try and re-download it and put it back in order and play the one that I wasn't finished with. But then because it played like 3 seconds of the next episode, when it gets to that one, it skips to the one after that. So it becomes this cascade of I have to delete it, re-download it, put it back in the library. So I got fed up with that. It just pissed me off. And I'm like, I'm done fucking with this play. It should be totally simple and just continuous. And it should be an option. And there aren't enough preferences for me to be able to set that. So I'm just like, I'm done. So I looked for another app. This was one of the highest rated apps. It's free. And so I tried it out. I've been trying it today. And so far, so good. Knock on wood. I might even pay for it.
Cool. If that doesn't work out, I suggest trying Downcast. But if you like, lots of people like Overcast. What do you use these days, Drew?
Downcast. I used Downcast for a long time, and then I tried Overcast for a while, and it was fine. But I eventually went back to Downcast. I don't even really remember why. I remember it was easier to create playlists in Overcast, but it didn't have all of the functionality that Downcast had.
And Downcast got a major update relatively recently.
Yeah.
Which is what fucked it from my old iPod.
What are some of the unique features?
I have on Downcast, I have 127 podcasts and 16 playlists, and it handles it with no problem.
Well, I'm probably going to check out a couple more apps just to check them out.
Yeah, I think you can try Downcast for free too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at this point since I've given up on Apple. I'm willing to entertain any of them.
You might enjoy my album art with a new podcatcher because you don't see that in iPod, right? Or Apple, it's not as easy to see the cover.
It's not as easy to see. I don't know how notes, I didn't look at notes.
Oh, yeah, because the notes all have, lately the notes haven't had a lot of links in them.
Back in the day when I first started listening to podcasts, so like what, 7, 8 years ago, I used the Apple podcast app initially. And it did have one feature that I liked that I have not been able to replicate on other podcast apps. And maybe it's because I'm not smart enough to figure out how to do it. But it had a smart playlist where it was just the most recent episode of every podcast.
Oh, cool.
And I actually really like that feature.
Overcast can do that.
Yeah, I thought it could, but it never worked for me the way I wanted it to.
Oh.
But yeah, again, maybe I wasn't savvy enough to figure it out.
Yeah. Anyway, so more Heather's notes before we render a verdict?
Or more pump up the volume
notes? I'm sorry. Notes? Well, I do have Dougie's pump up the volume notes if you want to hear them.
Yeah. I mean, I skimmed through them, but I didn't want to... I didn't want to take his material and integrate it with mine, so I just kind of figured we would regroup.
Yeah, I can understand that. Let's see. Library.
I did enjoy his predictions. I want more of those.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So here's I can't really, it's not Dougie digs it. It's more like the Dougie review. Well, he does dig it though. So maybe I'll put the music in right now.
Dougie digs it. Dougie digs it. Dougie digs it.
So, pump up the volume. Once again, a film I haven't watched for a long time, but it's one I've watched a lot, so I can probably speak to it at a high level. So, as best as I remember, the first time I saw this back in the very early 90s, around my last year at school, I don't think I was ever as much of an awkward loner as Mark is portrayed as, although by this time I was probably doing a better job of integrating with normal society than I might have managed 3 or 4 years earlier. I could certainly relate to the character. His eclectic taste in music certainly resonated. Both of the bands featured in the film, not just in the soundtrack, but also in Mark's posters, tapes, and albums, were all familiar to me from my own collection. Okay, it was a couple more years before I got into Leonard Cohen, but Bob Dylan or Tom Waits fulfilled similar roles for me at that time. Christian Slater gives an excellent performance. The only time I can think he has been better is in True Romance. The charismatic on-mic Harry doesn't seem like much of a stretch for Slater, but the quiet, awkward portrayal of Mark is much more subtle than most of his on-screen appearances. Samantha Mathis is also great as Nora, imbuing the character with a, incoming oxymoron alert, a vulnerable confidence that seems perfectly appropriate for a character of that age and time. The overall plot could be easily dismissed as another teen angst story, but for me, the underlying issues that were revealed at the school and with the students, perhaps a light version of the Lynchian trope of the revelation of a dark underbelly hiding under a thin utopian veneer, gave the film an added dimension. That being said, it's mainly the music and Harry's often dark humor that kept me returning to this film over the years. I work testing software, and throughout the years I've had test functionality around some of the new users. Anytime I had to do this, the first user added to the system has always been Charles U. Farley. It's a boring job, and you have to latch on to anything that will put in even the briefest smile on your face. So will it stand up to a rewatch by me or the Brothers Anderson now? For me, I suspect it would still work, even if just for the combination of music and an element of nostalgia. As in general, I'm fairly forgiving of the films that may have been dated. There are very few similarities between A Pump Up the Volume and Donnie Darko. A troubled misfit school kid, great soundtrack, many dark issues revealed beneath a positive facade. Both feature a Seth, Green in Pump Up the Volume and Rogan in Donnie Darko, but now he's reaching. I don't think Donnie Darko has been covered in Not in a Creepy Way, but when I've heard it discussed on other podcasts, the general feeling is it doesn't stand up to a rewatch. Regardless, I've still enjoyed it. Yeah, and at any time I've watched it. The only issues on a rewatch being the lack of impact to the Jim Cunningham character at the end, and regarding the director's cut, The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen being replaced with Never Tear Us Apart by NXS. Both are good songs, but I prefer the first. Anyway, for the brothers, I'm not sure. I think when watching this, you need to try to put yourself back in high school years, as it's definitely of its time and place. During the discussion of Tim Burton's Batman, I seem to recall Eric was the only brother to give the movie a pass as he attempted to take himself back to 1989. Ignore the Nolan films, remember this was the darkest on-screen Batman that we had seen up to this point. So I'm guessing Brother Eric will be the most positive about Pump Up the Volume. Brother Jay is a more difficult call. Usually, if I really like a film, then Brother Jay won't. The Big Lebowski is an obvious example. The soundtrack doesn't feature George Michael or Howard Jones style music, so I'm not sure there's much there to win him over. My only hope is that Brother Jake can take himself back to high school days, but I think at best this will get a B minus or a C. Perhaps an outside chance of an upgrade based on Slater's appearance in The West Wing. Brother Drew, I think, will likely be somewhere in the middle. My only doubt is he may be just a little too young for the time period to resonate with him, in which case he might not like it at all. So, to sum up, I have no idea what you'll make of this, but I'm looking forward to hearing the conversations regardless. And if any of the above helps, then that's even better. Cheers, Dougie. Well, thank you, Dougie.
Good job on the West Wing reference.
Dougie listens. It's scary how much Dougie listens.
I'm glad to hear he's a West Wing fan. He was Jack Reese, by the way, Donna Moss's love interest through a story arc. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what Dougie didn't know is that we all saw it together. And now he knows the story that it all resonates at least a little bit.
Yeah, it was kind of a bonding moment for the three of us.
And we haven't, I mean, maybe we've gotten into a little bit, but Jason's style of music includes George Michael and Howard Jones maybe is like highlighted that it's not really in my wheelhouse as much. But Jason also introduced us to Nirvana and Henry Rollins. So,
yeah, see the Stanley episode, right?
I'm going to redo the Stanley episode, actually. Like, take it, remove it from So I Married an Axe Murderer and maybe augment it with a little more music because it was, to me, that was a fun thing. Anyway, actually,
it's still a great album.
You know what? So if we do a music album soon, what should we do? Is it Drew's turn to pick?
I was trying to think of this the other day.
I mean, I'm going to do a solo Montrose at some point. I'm just going to sit down here and Harry hard on it. But
talk hard.
Yes.
I was going to suggest that we noodle on it this week and come up with some nominations next week.
Yeah, that would be fun. So, okay. So, we didn't get you your actual letter grade, Brother Jay.
So for Heather's, which I think I already said, that just gets a straight up F. Like, I almost give it just an I for incomplete because I just feel incomplete after having watched it and want my time back. As far as Pump Up the Volume, I'm gonna give it an A minus. I think it's a great movie still, a little dated, some tough parts as an adult, but the fact that it can bring me back. It's kind of the mark to a good movie. The acting was a little rough, but not as rough as Heather's. So I'm definitely glad I watched it before I watched Heather's. Cause I would have really, I would have been much, much harder on Christian Slater, even though there's a, you know, the movie with Heather's was younger for him. But, I think this is a fine movie. It still stands up for the most part. So.
Brother Drew.
Yeah, I really like this movie. I'm happy that my opinion didn't change. It may have even improved upon rewatching it now that I'm a little older. This is a movie that's always stuck with me. The music was a big reason. There were some little nuggets in the movie that have always stuck with me, like sort of the parental philosophy of if you get good grades, then your parents won't fuck with you. Like, I to a certain point, I can get down with that. even today, I can. So I've always thought about that.
Ooh, note to my nieces.
I mean, I have actually had conversations with my children that are in that vein. Just the sort of, not going that far, like get good grades and I'll leave you alone, but more like we have rules for a reason and it's almost entirely for your benefit. Even if it doesn't feel like it. And if you just follow those rules, your life will be easier because, you know, we'll trust you more. We'll give you more leeway because we know that you can follow the rules. And it's become a whole thing, but it always reminds me of this movie.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's, I think if you were a child of that time, you know, if you experienced high school in the late 80s and early to mid 90s, I think this movie will resonate with you, even if you didn't watch it at the time. And if you did watch it at the time, I think you will be really rewarded with rewatch, because it is strong on the nostalgia. And for me, that there, it's even greater, because it evokes a period in my life when I was still like really in the midst of a time when the three of us would hang out regularly. And I don't think I realized that particular time in our lives, especially mine, was like coming to an end in the next couple years. So like having those, there are a couple movies that just really remind me of that time. This is one of them. Young Guns 2 is another one.
Is that a Christian Slater flick too?
I think so. Yeah, so there are movies that just remind me of the time when we all had the availability to hang out together. So I have fond memories of that. And I'm even enjoying it now, because this conversation has been great. You know, it's just the opportunity to hear Jason talk about his experience at his second high school, which is something I'd never heard before in quite that way. It's really rewarding to me, because...
Well, we're really going to dig deep in that well when you talk about Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Yeah, but it's great because, you know, especially back then, the Anderson family wasn't really great about talking. So a lot of things would happen and not really get discussed in any manner whatsoever, so... it's really interesting to go back and hear like Jason's perspective from that time. So it's, yeah. So this movie continues to pay dividends for me, and I'm really happy about it.
Yeah. I'll probably end this episode here with, a thank you to my friend Heather, who suggested this movie. I want to also, express my condolences to Heather, because her mom passed away last week. Her mom's name was Suzanne. So I want to, say kind words to Heather and thank her for, I don't know. There's words that I don't have right now, unfortunately. But so let's pour one out for Suzanne, and we'll take this out with some James Taylor.
Well, but before you go all the way out, I did want to say that, somebody I know who's listening just celebrated 30 days of sobriety, and just want to give encouragement that those days turn into months and those months turn into years. So just day by day, you'll get there. Congratulations.
Awesome. Drew?
Also, I might suggest, to tie it all together, there's a Leonard Cohen song named Suzanne.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay.
That I would not have experienced if it wasn't for this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you. Walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you